You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together. If you're loving this podcast, we invite you to go deeper and partner with us in our work by joining the Gravity Commons, our online community of practice for connecting and learning together.
As a member of the Gravity Commons, you get access to live podcast recordings with upcoming guests, as well as other opportunities to connect and learn together with us in real time.
Including learning labs, member meetups, discussion boards, online courses, and our practitioner podcast. Go to gravityleadership.com/commons to find out more. See you in the commons.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, everybody.
Good day.
Here we are.
Good day. Good day. We're whispering this morning
because Christy's really kids are still sleeping. It's really early here in Colorado. My kids are sleeping.
Yeah.
They can't hear you because you're in my headphones, but they could hear me if I screamed.
But yeah, we thought in solidarity we would all just be really quiet for Christy.
I have a question for you all.
Listener, okay, if you could be quiet for Christy's kids as well.
So I was thinking that there's these like relational, like what do you call them? Like when you're in a relationship with people, sometimes they do things and you're like, why are you doing that? Right. So one of them would be like speaking louder than necessary at your face, you know, like there's a volume issue. Yeah.
You don't even need to be in like a real solid relationship for no, me
just,
for that
just
to
be
feel
at the grocery store
or yeah, people that are like close talkers, you know, they get right up, they get right up in your grill and you keep trying to back away. And finally they get you against a wall and there's nowhere to go. Yeah. Can you think of, so I don't know, what do you call those? Those little things, social bugaboos,
social faux pas.
Is there
faux pas?
Is there one of those kinds of things that bothers you more than others?
I'm trying to think of other ones other than those two. Those are good ones.
Those are two. I think I have a less tolerance than I'd like for people that just fart when they're talking to me, like really loud.
Yeah. Does that happen often?
Because there's certain people in my life that are like, darn it, I am not going to be embarrassed that I have lower wind.
Are they all under the age of 13?
Well, several.
Listen, I got three boys here, and a husband. That's a lot of boy.
What does that? You get a lot of hot wind in the house.
Oh, I see.
Yes. How as a mom do you like teach your kid to have manners when it's like, you know, when they laugh and giggle?
So like speaking of manners, when I was a kid, when you burped, you said, "Pardon me," and when you sneezed, you said, "Excuse me." And when you farted, you said, "Did you hear that?"
Gosh.
It worked in my family. I always thought that was weird.
No need for excuse or pardon.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, listen. The women who are listening right now are like, "Christy, please stand up and say something and change the conversation." Oh, this is my social faux pas.
Is it having to do a podcast with you guys that are insufferable?
No, when we talk... No, just
speak for yourself, Matt.
Oh, you guys.
Okay,
Christy. I do love you very much.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Christy.
I was just thinking about people that speak really close to my face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something about I completely lose all focus. I can't. All I gotta like I panic. I'm like I gotta get out of here.
Look out!
It's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird. Yeah. Anyway, I was just thinking about that because I was I got a neighbor who's a close talker.
A neighbor who's a close talker.
And a close stander.
I suppose you have to stand close if you're going to talk close. Let's say a really long neck.
leaning really far in.
You mean a loud talker. Is he a loud talker and a close talker?
No. No, he doesn't really talk overly loud. Although the older I get, the more I appreciate loud talkers because I'm like, I can hear you.
Yeah, I was thinking about how I've been in conversations where people talk too quietly, and you know, I don't know if it's my old ears, but I'm always like, I really wish you'd speak up because I want to hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
and I've also been in conversations where people they tend not to understand like reciprocal mutuality in conversations where like now you can ask somebody else a question, you know, like where they just sort of, they seem very content to just sort of pontificate or talk about themselves or, you know what I mean? And they're not curious about anything else or anyone else. That to me is like a, I don't know if it's a pet peeve, but I notice myself shut down like hardcore in conversations like that. I'm just like, okay, I am not interested anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all done here. So
I think that's something we got to teach our kids. Like I actually practice, like I tell my kids sometimes when we are going somewhere, I'm like, think of a question that you can ask them at dinner or, you know, something like that. Because I think
that's good parenting. Yeah.
Otherwise they will talk about themselves.
Yeah.
Well some of my kids just wouldn't talk.
It's right. It's kind of natural at a certain phase of, you know, like brain development, probably.
Sure.
I feel like I've read that somewhere. And so kids, like I don't mind kids who just talk about themselves. Right. But I find like I'm really proud of my kids when they get a little older and they're like they enter into conversations and they're like
curious about
somebody else.
She's awesome at that. Like we just hung out.
Yeah.
And
we were just at your house.
Yeah. She was amazing. Just so mature and super really engaging great. And super fun to talk to. And it was great.
Yeah.
It was really good.
We had a great time hanging out at your house. I really appreciate your hospitality.
It was fun.
Christy. Yeah. We just got back from vacation. So.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. And part of that was hanging out with my 21-year-old daughter who just graduated from college. We went out to Colorado Springs and it was loads of fun. We went whitewater rafting. We went to an Avett Brothers concert at Red Rocks.
Ooh,
gorgeous so concert fun. Venue. It was amazing. An amazing show with Regina Spektor. That's an artist that my daughter's really into. Drove around Garden of the Gods. What else did we do? It was loads of fun.
That's so
good. And hung
good.
Out with the Penleys. So.
Yeah, you did. It was fun. I just kind of wish there was more time. That's all.
Yeah, it was just a few days. We kind of tried to jam it into our family time. So, yep, it was loads of fun. And I'm grateful for your hospitality and your family,
Kristen.
Well, no. Thanks for coming. Next time, all family, all of us, all oh, three families. All it'll be amazing. Us?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Christy's in the basement will be ready.
Christy's plotting. Yeah, yeah. We had to stay in your daughter's room, which I really appreciate her giving up her room. So
you know what else? You know what else is fun? Your vacation. Right?
It was fun. Yeah. and you were you there? Wait, how?
I just know.
I when thought you, I saw you.
You sent me some pictures. When you vacate,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You have
sent
fun.
Some pictures. Yeah. Yeah, we had a great time. We just hung out with our families. Both my wife and I's families live in Minnesota. About half my family's in Minnesota and her whole family's there. So we had a great time. Just
water things.
We did some water things, yeah. Did a few lake things, you know, as you do. Yeah. We have a game we invented. That's kind of a combination of volleyball and soccer and tennis. And it's really fun. We've actually talked about, like, maybe we should write up a, you know, rules list and see if we can give the game away. But anyway, we played that game and hung out with family and had some good conversations, and it was fun. It was a good time.
I'm glad.
Yep. It's good to be, right, well, good to be back. Got back last night, so.
And now you're, like, ready to go.
Yeah, I got to do a few. We're recording this early Sunday morning. And I got to do a few edits on my sermon before I get in the shower and go to church. So
okay.
That's what's going on for me.
Well, so anyway, we're diving in.
Yeah, we're diving in. This is Axiom 4. We're right in the middle of our book, essentially. Or I guess Axiom 5 is probably right in the middle. But God meets us in our messy reality. This series has been loads of fun.
Yeah, it is.
To have these conversations with you and Gino. And Matt, it's been awesome. It's been loads of fun.
Yeah.
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 So.
Yeah. I don't know if there's
anything else we need to say about this.
Do we need to belabor this? Do we need to?
I don't think so. I mean,
I think we dive right in.
We're going to talk about this axiom. And so yeah, the fourth axiom,
every time,
God meets us in our messy reality.
Every time Chrissy says dive in, I think of that Stephen Curtis Chapman song.
Which one?
I'm diving in, I'm going deep in over my head. I want to be caught in the rush, lost in the flow. In over my head, I want to go.
Okay, I'll pick a different
the river's
statement.
Remember the saddle the up your wide, horses.
The river's water is
I'm ready to saddle up here, people.
That'll be your new one.
I'm diving
your
new in. One. Listen,
okay.
your new catchphrase always has to come from a Stephen Curtis
There's
Chapman
one or two listeners who understand what I'm talking about.
Let's saddle up our horses.
Yes. That'd be great.
We got a trail to blaze.
Let's dance in like Cinderella. See, look at you guys. It was my era. I could come up with these.
Yeah, okay.
I want that's the new challenge,
Christy.
We'll call it the Christy Penley challenge. Oh, can I tell you guys a story real quick before we jump into this? My daughter.
Yeah,
all right.
My daughter and her friend are doing a 24-hour Dollar Tree challenge starting this afternoon.
What does that mean?
So she took the money she's been earning, watering plants and doing other things around the house as an allowance. And they went to the Dollar Tree yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And for 24 hours, they can only use things that they bought at the Dollar Tree yesterday.
So, some parameters, right? Do they need to buy new
clothes?
Well,
I thought there'd be parameters.
Food?
Nope. She bought food. She bought a hula skirt. She bought a hairbrush. She bought
shampoo.
So I said, you can take $10, go to the Dollar Tree. And a neighborhood dad took her with her friend's dad. Anyway, he sends a picture of them like having fun. He's like, they're having a blast at the Dollar Tree. Anyway, she gets home and she's like, look at all the stuff I got. I'm like, you got all this for $10? She goes, no, it costs $50. What? What? And she is like, it's okay. Jeff paid for it. I was like, oh my gosh, no, that's not okay. Anyway, so my daughter starting this afternoon, the challenge is to only use the $50 worth of junk she bought from the Dollar Tree for 20. And she's so, this is like top three experience of my daughter's life. She loves this kind of stuff.
So funny.
She's so creative that way.
Gosh. Yeah,
she could be the next, you know, the ice challenge and someone just came up with it. You know, like, yeah. I feel like she could do that. She, yeah. That's her.
Totally.
That's
Instagram influencer.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All All right, listener, your challenges to get through this challenges. Podcast.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's saddle up. Let's saddle up our horses. Here we go.
Welcome back, everyone. We are in the middle of a series on our new book, Having the Mind of Christ, working our way through the eight axioms for a robust faith. Joined once again, as always, by Gino. Hey, Gino.
Hello.
Christy Pinley and Ben Sternke. Hello, you too.
Hey, everybody.
Glad to be here,
good
y'all.
To see y'all.
And we thought we'd do this to kind of announce the launch of our book, but instead of Ben and I just talking about it, we are talking with Gino and Christy, who are two people that have worked for a long time with Gravity, using Gravity's materials, and their love and wisdom and intelligence, brilliance really, have impacted this a great deal. So that's why we're having them interact with it and chat about it. So today we're on axiom four, yeah? And that axiom is God meets us in our messy reality. This chapter is really building upon God is always present and at work, in the sense that we are taking a look at all of the ways that Jesus ruthlessly, systematically, like regularly, helped people reckon with what's actually going on. In this chapter, we talk about hustling God, trying to meet God in pretense or falsity, trying to live somewhere other than we are. And we talked about the issue of what's called spiritual bypassing, where sometimes we are experiencing something we know is wrong or bad, or maybe it's just sad. Maybe we're hurting or in pain. And instead of being present to that, instead of being more awake to what's real and what's really going on, we sometimes even use God to avoid reality. Lord help us. So anyway, Gino and Christy, we're going to chat about this with you, and I maybe just to kick us off, I'm curious, how has this axiom proven true in your life? Where and in what ways have you found it helpful? Christy, let's start with you.
Yeah. So I was angry at you guys, by the way, when I read this, because you put something in here that like got to the core of me and I wasn't expecting it. But you talk about how basically we need to either like stay committed to our hustle or meet God. Demand God to be something other than God or meet God. Mm. Impress others or meet God. Be right or meet God. Mm. And I read this list that you kind of put in the book, and it was God met me there. Because so much of my life I have tried to hustle, or I've tried to pretend, or I've tried to just be right, or I've done, instead of actually allowing God access to where I really am, like being honest about that, I've just kind of lied my way through because I wanted to be the good girl. And that has been something I've been chewing on, honestly, for the last 4 days since I read it.
Yeah.
So I'm not really angry at you, but I was just surprised because I talk about this and I like, you know, I want this to be my life. And then when I read that, there was real conviction and real like, ooh, where do I see this in my life? And unfortunately, I was like, being honest, I see it a lot of different places. And so thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I think I can speak for Ben when I say that he struggles with all this stuff, but I don't struggle with any of it. Yeah. No, I think I can speak for Ben when I say that we write these things because we write these things because we need to be reminded of them too. These are the places where these are the Kairos moments, if you were right, the need to be right, getting angry, feeling ashamed, wanting to impress or pretend or pose. These are places of, I think, falsity. We tell ourselves these are good ideas, but really what they do is they shut us off from the God who's present in our work. And if we can, like you said, Christy, like if we can recognize them as such, then they become portals into the kingdom rather than walls that keep us from the kingdom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In many ways, this axiom builds on, you know, the first, God is always present and at work. The second axiom, as you said, Matt, but it also builds on the first and third axioms. These kind of overlap with each other and build on each other and are implications of each other sometimes. But the God who is present and at work is love and looks just like Jesus. And that's been one of the most important factors for me in being able to sort of meet God in my reality, because I recognize a lot in what you're saying, Christy, because I think and Matt, you said these feel like good ideas to us to you know, spiritually bypass and that kind of thing. But the reason they feel like good ideas is that we are oftentimes deep in our bones convinced that we do need to be productive in order for God to accept us, in order for God to like us, in order for other people to love us. Or, you know, be impressive or, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so, you know, when I began to recognize, for myself that, oh, okay, the reason that I don't want to face my messy reality is that I'm afraid that the mess down here disqualifies me from God's love. It disqualifies me from God wanting to be with me, you know, because I'm such a screw up.
Yeah.
You know, how could God want to be with me? And so in order to meet God in my messy reality, the other axioms, you know, I have to do some work there as well to take some steps of trust and faith to say, okay, you know, I can meet God here because God is present and at work, and the God who is present and at work is filled with love towards me and is just like Jesus and accepts me, wants to be with me. It's huge.
It's a good word, Ben. Chino, how about for you? How has this axiom proven true, or how has it been helpful?
Yeah, I think that so much of my life has been led aspirationally. And a lot of that is to avoid pain just in my childhood and things that I've done to myself or others have done to me. And so I think I've been shaped to believe that as long as I don't, if I get involved in that pain, if I really focus on what's really happening in my life, that could destroy me. So the only way to heal is to get ahead of that, to move forward. And so I have taken this view in the sense of how I see God, is that God isn't going to deal with what's really happening if it's painful, because that doesn't do good work in you. And so this axiom kind of named, well, one, that I have a hustle, and that is like positivity, like toxic positivity it can be a hustle for me. And that actually moving into the pain doesn't destroy me, but is where I find healing. And so those are like Enneagram 7 issues that you kind of work through and start to learn about yourself. But this axiom for me names one, like how I'm trying to move away from the things that could actually help me, and how I don't have to be afraid of what has happened to me, because that's where I might have a meeting place with God.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Toxic.
That's really good.
Positivity. That's quite a phrase.
Yeah. That's really good. But you know, Gino, you bring up the Enneagram and how sevens need to like avoid pain. And Christy, you've talked about being a three, about like this need to achieve. And I think this axiom challenges kind of both of you from like a core hustle you have. But I'm just aware too that, like, you know, Ben's an Enneagram 1 and I'm an Enneagram 4, and I feel this axiom too. I think we all have ways. I think we all have ways of not facing our true self, facing what's really happening, and we do it for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That's a really good point.
I find that, like, often I'm either in the past or I'm in the future, but I don't like to stay in the present. I, you know, there is this, either I'm like, oh, that shouldn't have happened that way. And I'm like kind of dwelling on like, I wish I would have done it differently, or I wish, I don't know. Or I'm worried and anxious about the future, but it's hard for me to stay present. And part of that, I think, is I don't like yucky emotions. And what I mean by that is when something comes up that causes, you know, frustration or anger or, you know, I'm in some ways like Gino, I want the positive emotions. I want the happy and the content and the whatever. And so I think I've even been told by people, taught by people, modeled by people to push those aside, those bad feelings, those hard feelings, don't matter. You can be in control of them. They're not good. Like, I believed all those lies about it. And so to actually be present in those things and believe that God is meeting me right there is foreign to the way I grew up.
Yeah.
Well, this kind of gets at the second question I was going to ask you, which is, where is it most difficult for you to trust this axiom? And I wonder, maybe as we chat about, you know, using different lenses to access, you know, the places where we like to hide, I wonder if there's an anecdote or a story where this is particularly challenging you right now or calling you closer to God or closer to the kingdom.
I think if I give a little bit more space, I'll probably come up with a number of stories. But the first thing that occurs to me is there's something that runs in my head. I'll give you guys an insight into what happens when I start feeling pain. Is I instinctively start whistling because I think of The King and I, the musical, there's a song called Whistle a Happy Tune, and the lyrics go, I won't sing for you, but whenever I feel afraid, you know, that this idea of like bypassing my pain by whistling, fake until you make it. And it actually happens in my body. Did a lot of theater growing up, and I hear this and so whenever I hear myself whistling, I know there's something that I need to reckon with.
Holy
whenever
cow,
I dude. Whenever I hear myself kind of singing or something, yeah. I just ask myself the question, like, what are you feeling right now? And Gino. So this happens pretty regularly, so I need to work on this all the time. So I don't know there's one massive story. It's just this is a constant thing.
Yeah, bro, that is so interesting. Because again, I think in a shallower in a shallower way of looking at these things, one might look at you as somebody who's always filled with joy. Like, you know what I mean? And you might think of yourself that way, like, yeah, man, I'm always whistling. Like I you know, like I've just got so much joy, you know, joy in the Holy Ghost. And it's fascinating that you've identified that. I mean, I have some of those things as well that I've needed to learn to identify, things that automatically come online in my body. I don't make a choice to, you know, feel anxious in the pit of my stomach, like, or tense in my shoulders, or, you know, tapping my teeth together, my jaw being tight. Like, these are things we don't make choices to do. They're reflexive actions our bodies take in response to what's actually happening, our messy reality. And I love that example, Gino, of just learning to pay attention to the things that your body reflexively does and learn to ask questions. Like, take one step back from that and say, why is this happening right now? What's going on for me that I don't want to face, that my body is sort of reflexively avoiding or looking the other way about? Man, that's such an interesting, I've never heard that from you before, Gino.
Sometimes what I find though, well, but I think because of recognizing that God's meeting me in my reality and that I can name this and it's going to be okay, I don't have to like whistle louder to avoid that I might be going into dealing with reality. Sometimes I'm whistling just because I'm whistling. Yeah. And so I think there's evidence of like healing, and I am a pretty joyful person, but it's rooted in something different than avoidance and fear or a practice of, hey, I don't want to deal with this right now because I only have so much capacity. All maybe, you know, important ideas. But for me, I really needed to work through this formation that was given. Hey, instead of being upset right now, just sing a song and pretend like everything's okay.
Yeah. Yep. It's awesome, man. Thanks for sharing that. Anything from you, Christy?
We're all thinking. I don't have anything specific, although I do think that when I have emotions that don't necessarily match what's going on, for example, my oldest recently started dating somebody, And you know, when you're dating, it's like everything is awesome. Oh. Everything is awesome. And and they're like spending all this time together and all this kind of stuff. And he just said to me like, oh, I'm going over and hanging out. And he left and I like teared up. And I was like, what is going on? Like, this is like happy and like beautiful and good. And I really like her. But my emotions weren't matching like the fact that they were just going to go watch a movie. And I didn't want to like really dive in, if I'm honest, because there was like this lie I was believing of, oh, my value is less because now somebody else is in his life, right? And that's like, this is all like adult parenting and all this kind of stuff. But I think when my emotions are bigger than the actual situation kind of equals, it's like a alarm for me going off that, am I pretending like something's not, am I asking questions to really dive into what's going on? Or am I just kind of pretending until my emotions catch up with me? And then I have to look at it because I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Why am I crying? Because he went to go see a movie. Does that make sense? Do you guys experience that? Is that just a girl totally. Thing?
Yeah. 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 I think, no. It's, I think you're just naming something else, Christy, about, you're naming something else about how this functions for all of us. That I think the things that automatically come online in our bodies are things that we need to learn to pay attention to. Yeah. And so I appreciate hearing that. I think there's something good about this, this axiom, I think, opens us up to taking those steps back from our lived experience. And instead of just trusting our responses, right. Or denying our responses to life. So I think those are the two ditches we fall into. Like we either take our responses to life and say, well, of course I'm upset. You know, you trust that emotion and assume it tells you something about reality, or you deny that emotion and assume that you shouldn't be feeling it. And I think that this axiom opens up space, or it has for me, it opens up space to instead just say, oh, I can just meet God in naming this. I don't need to know what this means right now. Yes. I don't need to know, you know, what this is even all about right now. I can just meet God here and you know, be with God in the midst of this and hear from God and learn to, just wrestle with what's happening in my life and hear a word from God in the midst of that. Some good news.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Carol from Fergus, Ontario, Canada. When I think about the years in my GLA cohort, I am filled with fond memories and gratitude. I looked forward to our time together each week. In my second year, although I was the only woman and Canadian and only one of two non-pastors, this group saw how God was working in my life and encouraged me along the way as we processed our Kairos moments together. I was at a point of transition in my life, and having people who were learning the same things and processing with them was incredibly valuable for me. We were all from such different places and contexts, but it didn't matter. We helped each other see the world through the eyes of Jesus. This was a safe and encouraging space to process what I was going through and to equip me to be a leader who noticed the activity of God in my life. I'm so thankful for the work of Gravity Leadership.
To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
So we've brought up a few things here that we're just learning about. By we, I mean Ben and I, things like spiritual bypassing, stuff like that, the ways that we invent to hide from ourselves and from God. And so this chapter leaves me with questions, like things I want to explore more. I'm curious, Gino and Christy, for you, what would you be interested in exploring more? What kind of questions does this chapter not tackle or not answer that you would want to get into?
Well, actually, you talk about shoulding on yourself, and the power of kind of saying that to ourselves or to other people, believing that about other people. I would love for you to double click on that, because I think that that is something really common that we do in life. How does that play out, and how do we kind of like have our eyes open to that and then not let that control us?
Yeah. So this idea of shitting on yourself, like, let's say someone's on a hunger fast and they haven't eaten for 30 days and their organs are shutting down. Is it wrong to say you should eat something? You know, if your child is 3 years old and like wants to play in the street, a busy street, and every time you pull them out of the street and into the safe yard, they walk right back out into the street and sit down and play. Is it wrong to say you shouldn't play in the street? Mm-hmm. What we're talking about here is our need to control other people and want on them. And I think we can convince ourselves controlling other people and wanting on them is for their own good. And the two scenarios I just highlighted, I think we could agree, in general, those statements are for the other person's good. The issue is 99% of our shoulding and our wanting on people isn't about saving children from a busy street or helping somebody stay alive by not eating. It's usually things, I guess to break it down, Christy, the way I'd say it is, usually when I should on people, I am wanting on them. I'm trying to control them, not for their good, but for mine. I want them to change what they're doing so that I feel better, so that I'm less anxious, so that I can be right, so that I can do my thing. And that's where I think that I'm not trusting that God's going to meet them, even if they aren't conforming to my preferences, even if I'm anxious about them, even if I don't get what I want as it pertains to them.
Yeah.
So is that your experience?
I think that's how it's about controlling people.
Yeah. Is that your experience? I mean, I hear you, because I hear you saying most of it's with other people. I find that I should maybe more on myself than I do on other people. But it's still the same lie, right? And so I'm wondering, Gino or Ben, is that maybe that's the whole, like, I still am a recovering, like, God likes me and loves me person. And I think that that's where my should comes in, of I'm doing it to make him happy. And so anyway, it just hit me. If you have more to say, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. I think for me, Christy, that's where my shoulding normally happens as well. I mean, I'm pretty good at shoulding on other people as well. But I think the reason is because I do shit on myself, and that I think is it's related to the core lie kind of at the heart of this axiom, which is that some other place is where God will meet me. So yes. I have to change the situation or change myself or change you in order for me to be okay, in order for us to be okay, in order for God to be here, in order for God to work, in order for everything to, you know, not go to hell in a handbasket. Like something has, you know, and there's this controlling that we all come by it honestly. Like we're not all control freaks because, you know, we're, you know, megalomaniacs and, you know, just sort of evil people, you know, like trying to like control everything. We're all afraid. We're just afraid that things aren't going to be okay unless things change, unless I can change, unless I can be different, unless you can be different, unless we can get this figured out. And part of the power, I think, of this axiom is saying like, no, it's actually nothing more needs to happen for us to be with God and for us to name this reality and for us to trust that God is here, that God is at work, that God loves us. Like we're going to be okay if we name this reality. Mm-hmm. And that I think is the power of this axiom that speaks to the shoulding on myself and shoulding on others. That I don't think helps any of us.
Yeah. Thank you. That's helpful.
yeah, I don't trust myself. I don't trust myself to engage in this conversation when we're saying shitting on people. I won't say it correctly. Something's bad is going to happen on this podcast. So I'll just share. I appreciate
you
what you're
That's
saying.
Part of the reason
you shouldn't say that incorrectly, Gino.
I should not engage in this conversation, just knowing myself. But if I could offer up two things that I would love to hear you riff on, if we have time for both of them, in no particular order. One is there seems to be this messy reality that we are met in is kind of melancholy, and all, because that's a lot of our experience, and I think that's fair. What about the situations where reality is joyous? Like, what are the risks or the things that we might miss if we're not recognizing that God's meeting us in our joyous reality? That's one thing that came to mind for me.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. I think, Gino, this is where your superpower helps me a lot. I think being around healthy Enneagram 7s is a grace to me, because I don't have to even be awake to see what's wrong with the world. I can dream about it. You know what I mean? And so it's really helpful for me to be invited through other people's lenses and perspectives to appreciate what's good and right and beautiful in the world. I do think, though, there's an interesting place there between you noticing it, Gino, and me having an invitation or awareness I didn't notice it, for that thing to happen, Chrissy, you just talked about, where I should on myself that I should be more joyful and I should perceive more things like what Gino's talking about. And I just think this is such a trap for me. It's such a trap for me. Because then whenever I'm shooting on myself, I am ramping up my flesh to try harder, to do more, to perform better, so that I ultimately don't even need Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's this human generated scheme into some sort of moralistic obligation to perform. And so for me, then, the shooting is just a reminder, not shooting on ourselves, is a reminder that it's all grace, that anything that isn't surrender or yielding or consent or allowing or opening or spaciousness, anything that doesn't have that aroma will not lead to joy. It won't lead to the joy that Gino just sort of has in his attached to his heartbeat.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question, Gino, but that's what occurs to me when you ask that.
It does. I just wanted to respond with this, that I think what I'm hearing you say is that it's not any less of a reality if you're seeing it in what we might categorize as messy and negative versus joyful. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're not seeing reality. And I think that's beautiful. Because it's not, and if you're shooting on yourself, if I am, maybe in some situations, I'm thinking, I should really feel worse about this. That's actually not necessarily true. It could be true. I mean, I'm open to that, right?
Yeah.
Right. And one of the most confrontational questions friends ask me, have asked me, is what would it cost you if you decided you didn't have to be angry about this? What would you lose if there was nobody left to blame?
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, the messiness of my reality is I refuse to be content or joyful because I'm too wound up, too cranked up. And so I think what your question gets at, Gino, is really important for me, is that sometimes I'm creating a messiness that I can just simply let go of. Now, not all of it is like that, but some of the ways that I choose to respond to things, I can just choose to let them go. I could choose to let them go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really helpful. That's helpful for me as well, Gino. And I think you're, like Matt said, your superpower helps me. Because there is something... I think this axiom is, you know, these axioms are all kind of culturally, they're not like the eternal truths that everybody needs to know about God for all time. You know what I mean? They're mostly timely axioms about who God is and about how God works in the world that help people like us who have grown up in the ways that we've grown up, right? And so I think because the predominant mode has been, hey, you can't, you know, turn that frown upside down. You can't feel those negative emotions. I think that's why this axiom says that God meets us in our messy reality. But it is also true that I need to learn how to consent to joy. You know, as we've been talking Enneagram on this episode for quite a bit, and as an Enneagram one, I do have trouble consenting to joy because for me, it's all about the next. It's like, well, we finished that, on to the next thing. You know, it's about productivity. It's about doing the next thing. It's about doing more. It's about doing better. And so actually just celebrating something that is good is a really, really helpful spiritual discipline for me. You know, just to just to notice something beautiful and say, "Wow, that is beautiful," and to share that, and to be in that, and to be. If joy is what's truly there, then yeah, meet God there. You know, let's do it. But if pain is what's really there, let's meet God there as well. And so, I think that's good. That's a good word and a good expansion of what we talk about in this chapter. So, I appreciate that question, Gino.
Yeah.
What was your second question? You had another one, didn't you?
Yeah, so somewhat related is we hear when we talk about meeting in reality, we hear people, I've heard people talk about, well, my reality versus your reality. And I'm wondering if you could just kind of talk a little bit about that. Like, is there is a reality, God's reality, and we may experience it differently, like we've just named. But also, I don't think we're saying like, well, there's alternative realities here in some way. There's just different experiences of the same reality. So I don't know, how are you guys working through that in conversation when maybe you sense that people are saying the old thing, like my truth versus your truth kind of a thing? That might be true for you, that you need to meet God in reality. But for me, it's something different. Does that make sense?
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great question. I think Ben should answer it.
No, I haven't, it's great. Yeah, I'm happy to think about it. I guess just think about it out loud a little bit. I think when we're talking about, this is hard because we want to learn how to name our reality as ours and not impose that on others, and also not use that as an excuse to refuse to listen to other people's reality. And so when we're talking about reality here, you are correct. There is such a thing as reality, but we perceive it in different ways. And I think mostly what we're talking about in this chapter is our inner reality, our inner state, the feelings, the thoughts, the emotions, the stuff that's happening in our bodies that we need to reckon with. Yeah. And so I think you're right. There's something objective happening, you know, maybe to two people, but we respond to it in two very different ways. And that reality is, you know, the response, you know, to what's happening is the reality we need to reckon with. And I think when we're able to do that, when we're able to meet God in that reality, we avoid, you know, some of the pitfalls that we just talked about, you know, a few minutes ago, of either just trusting my feelings to tell me the truth about the world, or not trusting my feelings to tell me the truth about anything. And so I either just believe my feelings about the world, or I deny my feelings about the world. And I think just naming our feelings about the world helps us to reckon with, okay, this is my response, you know, to what's happened here. But then we can meet God there and say, well, what does that mean? You know, like, because I don't know if I'm being clear here, but like, I think it's
really
super
helpful.
Important for us to learn how to do that, you know? So, yeah.
You know, that's right really on
helpful. So maybe when people are meeting in reality, they're both reckoning with that inner stuff, as is kind of what you're saying. They're meeting with their internal reality. And so they meet as two people in this example that are meeting with the same internal recognition of their reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's how we discern things, you know, that's how we discern what God is doing, is by, you know, doing those kinds of things together. everybody naming their own, in our language, naming their own kairos.
I do think that like growing in our emotional intelligence helps us be able to name what's going on inside of us to understand, yes, God is meeting mm-hmm. us here. And in our society, I'm not sure that we are, what are the tools to help us grow in that? You just said naming the feelings that you had. Do you have anything else that you would say? This kind of helps us grow, because I do think what you're saying is true. But maybe we haven't been taught the tools of how to do that.
Yeah. I have some thoughts about this. It kind of coincides with how I was going to respond to Gino's question before I threw Ben in front of the bus. I remember reading the kind of the log and the speck passage from Jesus, don't try to help somebody get something out of their eye until basically you remove the log from your eye and you can see clearly. And I remember thinking like, how would I purpose to live like that? Right? How would I purpose to actually put that into practice? And two things I think that have helped me become more regularly do that, with still a long way to go. And the first is whenever someone shares a perspective on reality, Gino, that I don't share, instead of critiquing or condemning or correcting it, be curious about it. And treat that person as though they have something to teach me. So not an interrogation curiousness, not a cross-examination curiousness, but as just a wondering. And in order to do that, I have to notice whatever anger or fear or threat that person actually is for me. I have to notice that, and I have to sort of just like let that be, right? And the second thing is, if I think someone else needs to change and I can see it clearly, I think I can, to do two things. To one, prioritize my own change over theirs, whatever their change is that I see they need, and two, to be present to that person where they perceive God's presence and work, I think this has been a huge thing for me. I think I have certain specks in other people's eyes that really bother me. And they bother me more than they bother God. And the way that I know that is because that person isn't aware of that speck, or they're aware of a different speck that they want help with, and sometimes I have such a big log in my eye that I cannot even begin to see what I think I'm seeing clearly. And so if I agree to change, and I will humble myself to begin where they're willing to begin, typically the question of who's seeing reality correctly begins to resolve itself. Because now maybe we're both seeing it incorrectly, or maybe we both see parts of it that are correct, or maybe I'm right, but gosh, that's not even the goal of this thing. The goal of this thing is communion and love. So how do I move towards this person with communion and love rather than needing to vindicate my rightness? Is that, am I responding to what you're asking?
Yeah.
That's really good. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, final thoughts, final words as we wrap up this podcast on Axiom 4. Gino, Christy, do you guys have comments you want to make or questions you wanted to get in?
Man, I just think this would be a great book to do in community. Because even this conversation helps dig in a little bit more to what we read and processing how is this being played out in our lives. And so I don't really have any questions other than maybe just an encouragement that when you get the book, I encourage you to read it in community and talk about it, because I think it's helpful for me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it would be helpful for other people to be able to chew on it together.
Yeah.
Similarly, I think that the results of working through these axioms in community is that you have a community that's joined together in some of these axioms. Meaning, there are people that are working through the inner realities and dealing with those and coming and being present with other people in a way where we can start naming things without becoming defensive right away. We could just be curious, and we don't have to lead with condemnation, but maybe with curiosity. And so I'm not claiming that we're doing that perfectly in our church, in our communities, but we're doing it more than we used to. And it's more than I've ever experienced it in other communities. And it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. So yeah, work this out in community. Encourage people to read this book with you and get started in what might possibly be as we work through this together.
Mm. Man, good word, guys.
That is a good word. Well, that's what's in there. Maybe just end with this comment, like this, this book on axioms was taken from our Gravity Leadership Academy workbook. And that's why we lead these cohorts. You hear us talk about Gravity Leadership Academy all the time, is because we needed people to walk alongside us to appropriate and inhabit these axioms. And that's what we do weekly with multiple cohorts, Christy and Gino and Ben and I lead. So if this is stirring your heart and you want to investigate that more or experience what Gino just named, just drop us a line. We're happy to chat about that. Yeah. Thanks a lot for being with us today, Christy, Gino. Appreciate all the good things you're bringing to expand the work of this book.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. So, see you next time, listeners. Axiom 5 coming right
Thank
up.
Thank you. Woo-hoo.
Hey, everybody, it's Ben. I'm a little bit out of breath because I just did a workout. I'm getting back into working out after vacation. And, you know, those first couple workouts are, they kind of kick your butt. So I'm feeling a little out of breath, but I had to record this real quick for you. Our book that we just had this podcast episode about on these axioms, Having the Mind of Christ, our book is only 1 week away from release. I know a lot of you have pre-ordered and have already received your copies, but a week from now, July 26th, our book officially releases, and we're really excited about that. You can still join our book launch team, which gives you some cool perks. We're going to keep the launch team going after the release of the book, because this podcast series is going to continue after the release of this book. If you're adding things up in your mind, you may have realized that, hey, wait a minute, this book has 8 axioms, and you're only going to be on the 5th axiom next week when the book releases. You are correct. We are going to kind of straddle the book release with the podcast series, and so we'll do axiom 5 next week, and we'll continue on for a few more weeks talking about each axiom and then the conclusion of the book. So anyway, there's still time. If you want to join that book launch team, you can go to gravityleadership.com/launch. You'll get a free advanced PDF of the book to be able to read along with us. You can join discussions that we're having, live Zoom discussions about the book, do some Q&A. There's a Facebook group, etc. It'll be loads of fun. So I invite you to sign up for the book launch team. You can pre-order the book still from InterVarsity. If you go to ivpress.com and then just search for Having the Mind of Christ, and you can get 30% off plus free US shipping by using the code GRAVITY, and also Q&A. We'd love to hear your questions and reflections. If you go to gravityleadership.com/message, you can click the start recording button to ask us a question or to leave us a message. We've gotten lots of lovely messages from you all. And if you ask a question, we'll play it on a future episode and answer it as well. So I think those are all the little nuggets of info that y'all need to continue to track and follow us during this exciting season of our book launch. And I need to press stop here and just take a couple breaths, get my breath back after working out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for participating in our community in all the ways that you do. We really appreciate you, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Joining our Gravity community is free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast, and you can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Record button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, and with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.